start with a round of Nagasakis. One part eggnog, three parts sake. Some places won't make it for you, though, because eggnog is seasonal.
So here, I have my...
Oh, yeah.
Clinky clink.
I have my cocktail.
Yes.
I'm drinking a Nagasaki, an actual Nagasaki, which is one part eggnog, three parts
sake.
It's a lot of sake.
Yeah, the problem is that
I don't care for his ratio.
Yeah, he's got a bad ratio, especially if you're trying to do a podcast at 10:30 in the morning.
Hey, it's 11:30 over here.
Oh, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, but not for either of us.
So it's basically our day drinking episode.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it's the holidays, so I'm okay with that.
It's the holidays. One part. Yeah. Eggnog, three parts sake is, yes. I mean,
it's pretty strong.
And it's sake is already kind of sweet.
I should have put more ice in my Nagasaki to water it down because, whew, Andy. Anyway.
Yeah, so this is season 3, episode 10. It is a Benihana Christmas, and it is another holiday special.
Yeah, and it's actually a lot longer. It's 42 minutes long.
We should probably talk about how things start out because it's quite enjoyable. Dwight is who he is, and you know, it's time for a Christmas goose.
And what luck, he has hit one with his car.
Yeah, how lucky.
And he brings it into the office.
This is a question I have for you. Do you think he actually accidentally hit this goose, or did he get this goose and he's just coming up with a story?
Oh, I think he really accidentally hit it. It's a Christmas miracle because as the farmer hunter that he is, he would want to display his prowess by saying, I hunted this myself.
That's, you know, fair. Yeah.
He would take pride in that as opposed to he was like, I hit it with my car. It's a Christmas miracle. Like, you know.
He was already dead and we Schroots use every part of the goose. The meat has a delicious, smoky, rich flavor. Plus, you can use the molten goose grease and save it in the refrigerator, thus saving you a trip to the store for a can of expensive goose grease.
Don't want to waste that expensive goose grease.
Goose grease, yes.
Which I've never heard of goose grease before, but okay, Dwight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he brings this goose in, and oh man, props department. I wish it were a little bit more real looking. I don't know. That's just me.
A stuffed goose. But Toby finally does, which is pretty surprising, allows Dwight to keep his goose if he takes it to his car to clean it. That's nice.
It really does show that Dwight has tried to do this before and they've tried to stop him. And I really enjoy that Phyllis chimes in and she's like, would it be so bad?
Yeah.
It would be so bad.
They're like sort of on,
she's on board.
Dwight's side with this, which is also a Christmas miracle in a way.
It's Christmas, Toby.
We have a lot of Christmas little things going on in the office. There's a toy drive that Michael brings his old bike into, which is very Michael. He's trying to display his giving, and everyone notices that the bike is old, and he's just trying to unload his old bike to the toy drive.
Ding,
and
ding.
We also have this great little Creed moment where he takes a toy out of toy box.
Oh, my Lord.
And by trying to shame him, Jim points it out. And is Creed shamed?
No.
No, he is not.
Shameless. He's the most shameless person. Doesn't bother him. And two, we've got corporate handing out gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly plush. Lovely.
They look
gifts.
So soft.
It really
does. They look
does.
Like nice robes.
I am jealous that I don't have one of these. Probably someone somewhere sells plush Dunder Mifflin robes. And
I'm going to have to Google that right now.
See, because they look so comfy and cozy, and I wish I had one. Because my robe's fine, but it's not as plush as these ones are. And so it's
MyPartyShirt.com has a very similar
This
replica.
Is my party shirt.
It's $70.
Okay.
But it is a gray fluffy robe with Dunder Mifflin on it. So for the office people out there, here, I'll send you the link so you can send it to our
Yes, I'll put that
show
in the
notes.
Show notes.
I don't know how trustworthy this website is, but it's there.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
The Archie Blows.
MyPartyShirt.com.
It's very good. But Pam has a good gift that she's giving out for talking about gifts.
Yeah, she does have a good gift, and it's disappointing. Not her gift, but okay. Let's just talk about it. Pam is sending Dwight messages from the CIA in the hopes that he will believe that the CIA is messaging him and trying to get him to partake in some secret mission.
They're trying to recruit him.
Yes.
That's what the whole thing is. Yeah.
Yes. And so...
And she's been doing this for 3 months.
She's been working on it forever. And so her gift to Jim is that he gets to decide the top secret mission for Dwight. And this is next level prank, I think. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, it's the perfect gift. It's right in Jim's wheelhouse. Like, she has been thinking about this gift and essentially for 3 months. So during the time that he was gone as well, this has been kind of in the works. And so it's been really planned and thought out, and it's a very time heavy gift, right?
Like, yeah,
she put a lot of commitment and time into this.
Unfortunately, though, as Jim alluded to in a previous episode, well, he feels like he can't do these pranks at this level to Dwight because doing so is not the right thing for, like, his future, because he's the number two. And I think that this is I'm curious how you take this, because I do think that part of it is Jim genuinely not wanting to fall back into the old pranking stuff, because right before he left, he had that whole laying out all of the pranks that he's ever pulled and feeling like he was kind of being just wasting his time and that he was being immature. But I also think that this is his way of, because, like, this is in a way like a diamond tennis bracelet that Pam is giving Jim, in the sense that there's so much, you know what I mean? Like, it's a huge gesture. And so for Jim to accept it, he feels maybe like that's giving Pam the wrong message. So I think it's a two-part reason why he denied her, but I'm curious what you think. Do you think that it really is just about him not wanting to prank Dwight anymore, or is it also his way of, like, not trying to be with Pam again?
I don't think it's about giving Pam the wrong message. I think it's about him falling into the old patterns with Pam. And he sees that as a slippery slope that is going to take him back into the friend zone with Pam. And they're just going to go right back to their goofy, let's prank Dwight, kind of fool around in the office, jokey joke friend relationship that he saw himself in before, which got him nowhere. Like, it's essentially the friend zone, because she said, you know, he came to her and said, I want to be more. And she said, no, we're really good friends. I don't want to ruin that. And he's at the point now where he's in another relationship, and he sees that if he gets back into that pattern of just letting himself fall for Pam again and fall into that cadence that they had before, it's just going to be really bad for his mental health, because he feels like she isn't going to ever be able to be more than friends, because that's what she said, right? She said, we're just friends, and it stops there. And she has not yet made any kind of giant gesture to say anything more than that. So he is taking her word for it, as a gentleman would, and not pushing the issue, not making it awkward for her again. And he can't let his feelings get there, even though they probably are already there. But I feel like the whole accepting of this gift just puts him right back to where he was a few months ago before he even left Scranton at all. And I think that that's really hard for him. And that's why he lets her down, and she's really crushed by this. I mean, she's just like, oh, okay, and essentially takes it back and spends kind of the rest of the episode avoiding Jim. And she ends up kind of, you know, we'll get more into it later, but she ends up getting closer with Karen, kind of as a, oh, if this isn't happening with Jim, she's like, I'm going to make friends. I don't know. Like, she's just going through this whole change of situation and heart. And, you know, she was really cold to Karen because of her relationship with Jim. And she's like, why am I doing this? Because obviously nothing's happening with Jim.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's not moving.
And, like,
might as well not hold grudges with Karen.
Exactly. And this is, and I know that, you know, I've said this little phrase before, shoot your shot, but, like, this was Pam.
I don't know why that disturbs me when you say that.
This was Pam shooting. It's a basketball thing. This was Pam shooting her shot. And when you shoot your shot, you're making yourself vulnerable. You're putting yourself out there in a big way. And that was this moment. And so for her to be rejected in front of the cameras and also just by Jim in general, whenever she really was making herself so vulnerable in this, like, you know, I don't know. I've had these moments before where I've been super excited about something and I've let myself like feel all the joy of it and get really into it. And I share it with somebody and maybe they're not the, even just like they're not the level of enthusiastic that I expect them to be. And suddenly you sort of can feel that kind of crumble because you start to just analyze everything. Well, was this like the right idea? Should I have been as excited about it? Was this as awesome as I thought? What, you know, what's causing them to think that way? You know, you have all these things that are going through your mind. And then Pam also has the added gift of being in front of a doggone camera to see this sort of rejection play out. And it's like there's a reason that that's such, like, it's so painful when I watch this scene. I feel what Pam feels in that moment. And I think that's because it's a bit of a universal feeling that we can all relate to, because we've all had those moments where it doesn't even have to be this, but like maybe you heard a joke and you like come running home to tell your partner, or you come running home to, like, if you're, you know, younger, come running home to tell your parents or whomever, it doesn't matter. And you're like so excited about this joke and you tell the joke, and the person is just like dead faced about it and doesn't think it's funny. And even something as small as that can be kind of painful, and you feel embarrassed and you feel vulnerable because you, you know, you put your energy into this thing. And yeah, so for her to go as far as this and invest this much time, like, essentially what she was putting in front of Jim was this message: I've been thinking about you for 3 months and I, not only that, but like am partaking in something that it was something that you used to do. And I want
something we used to do together.
Yes, exactly. And I want to invite you back into that club with this huge thing. And it's sort of like the teapot. Like, this is Pam's teapot. It does not work out, and it's really sad and heartbreaking, and I'm gonna have a drink of Nagasaki.
Do you have a drink there? I want do you, are you drinking with me?
Yes, but not as quickly, it would seem.
Well, but we have someone else who got hurt this episode, and he started off being so high with his 2 tickets to paradise.
I've got 2 tickets to paradise. Pack your bags, we're leaving after tomorrow. Taking her to Sandals, Jamaica, all-inclusive. All-inclusive. You know what that means.
Yeah, Michael makes the bold move of first photoshopping himself into an old picture with him and Carol, of them on a ski trip. And
I just need a moment.
I don't know how to deal with this. And then he invites her to Sandals, Jamaica to leave like in 2 days. And she has kids. And how is she going to do that? Like, he has no concept of what it's like to like be like a family and a responsible adult.
And he's, it's just like a bandage. Like, he like tries to use that as a bandage for the really messed up thing that he did. Oh my goodness.
But he doesn't even see it as messed up. He's like, yeah, it's really funny. And you know what? Honestly, I think that the right person would have found that funny.
Yes. I think that the...
It's super weird.
It's a specific person, but it's also a specific
relationship.
Yes. Ding, 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 ding. And their relationship is not that relationship.
No.
Because I think that maybe the weirdest part is the kids. That they're kids. Mm-hmm. I will be completely honest with you. I have in the past done joking things like that, where it was a picture of like me and my siblings during the holidays, or like it was my family during the holidays, and for some reason my partner wasn't able to be there that time, and so I photoshopped them in as a joke and then like sent it around, and everybody thought it was funny, and that's fine. I think where it got weird is A, they haven't known each other for very long. B, the proposal.
Yeah.
And C, it's the dad of the kids. Like, that's so right. Weird. That part's really weird to me.
Oh, no, it's super weird. It's like he's replacing these children's father with himself. And that's wrong in any sense of that relationship. Like, if you marry into or get involved in another family, that you don't take that away from the kids.
No.
Like, the kids are always going to have their father. It's like, yes, you can be a father figure and you can be like a friend and you can be helpful and, you know, a like a supportive parent type person, but taking that away, like in a creepy way, yeah, it's not good. But like I said, it could have been funny, but it was not funny.
Yeah,
not good.
Not good,
not
Michael. Not
good. So
good.
Now so now Carol walks out the door and she ends it with Michael. And now he's stuck with two tickets to paradise, leaving day after tomorrow with nobody to leave with. He is quite the downfall. And we know what Michael's like when he's sad.
Oh yeah, he spirals. He is distraught because he just lost who he sees, I'm sure, is the love of his life.
Yep.
And that means everybody needs to be miserable.
Like everybody's attention, Christmas is canceled.
You can't cancel a holiday.
Give it up, Stanley, and you will lose New Year's.
What does that mean?
Jim, take New Year's away from Stanley.
Yeah, and he tries to make everyone miserable by canceling Christmas, and it just kills me that while he's doing all of this, he's wearing that robe from corporate. And it's so good. It's so good that he has it on right away. I love him just playing the preview of that song over and over. And now he says, like, I just want to taste it.
Why don't you just buy the whole song?
I don't have to buy it. I just want to taste it. I just want a little taste of it.
I use that all the time. I love that quote. I just want to taste it.
I just want to taste it.
Come on, my lover. Goodbye, my friend.
Well, I guess we could say in response to Michael's downward spiral, Andy has a great idea. Well, first Dwight goes in and then Andy tries to follow up. There's like still this whole tension volley for Michael's
three,
attention
right?
With Dwight and Andy. And this is very prevalent. And both of them are running to Michael's side to help him through his grief. Michael ends up on the floor behind Pam's desk at some point, which I find that a really great gag. It's really... very visual with the way the camera, it just catches his feet sticking out from behind the desk.
Yes. Oh, so funny. So how do we solve the problem?
A problem of, like Michael?
A problem like Michael, his lonely heart and his sad, broken heart and him wanting to take holidays away from people. Well,
we're going to Asian Hooters.
To Asian Hooters, to Benihana, where we're going to have some Nagasakes.
It was Andy's bright idea to go to Benihana because it's way classier than Hooters.
It's like Hooters, but classier.
And it kind of is, I guess. It is.
Oh, yeah. Like you could,
classier,
I don't know.
You got it right.
A Subway platform is classier than Hooters.
I don't know. Depends. Well, I don't know. But we get this great scene where Michael decides to gather his entourage and bring them with him because he can't do this kind of stuff alone. And, you know, actually, it kind of makes sense. When you're bummed out, you want to be surrounded by your friends. And Ryan does this amazing deflection of the invitation. And he basically uses every excuse he could possibly think of to Jim's chagrin, leaving him no excuses to give. And it's really, really good.
Come on, we're going to Asian Hooters.
Oh, man, I can't. Why not? I'm not feeling so well. I got a ton of work to do here. MSG allergy, peanut allergy. I just ate there last night.
Right. Feel better.
Thanks.
Come on, Jen, let's go.
Okay. Wow. Thanks for taking all the excuses, dude.
Doctor appointment, car trouble, plantar warts. Granddad fought in World War II. Here's your head, man. I keep mine in here. Look alive, Halpert. Welcome back.
So they are at Benihana, and... it is, it's interesting, or rather, it's hilarious because they all come in and, you know, you're expected that you might have to sit with another group of people because with Benihana, it's like a hibachi grill. And so they're making the food in front of you. So you all get stationed at a grill. Well, unfortunately, Andy, Jim, and Michael all get to sit together. But Dwight does not get to sit with him. So he gets tucked all the way around on the other side of this couple. And oh boy, he still wants to be part of the discussion. He wants to be part of the conversation.
This setup bugs me to no end, because what couple would be okay sitting between a group of people when you're all sitting down at the same time? Any person anywhere, mm-hmm, in any situation, mm-hmm, would be like, oh, let us move over one, mm-hmm, chair and let the other person join, because you don't want anyone talking over you like that at all.
No.
So I don't understand how this setup was maintained. Like, there, that this is one of those TV moments where it's like, oh, just communicate with each other or act like a real person. And I get mad
yes,
when the characters aren't, or like the residual, the obstacle that's thrown into the show, it's not acting like a real person would act.
Oh, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to put it. I get frustrated more than anything watching shows when they're not acting like real people. Yeah, that's the perfect.
Yeah, because it is. And I realize why it's there. It's to set up the comedy of like Dwight not being left out and not hearing. I mean, I feel like they could have established that just by Andy taking the seat next to Michael,
yep,
and having Dwight, you know, three people removed and kind of next to Jim. And they could have had like him and Jim kind of having like a little bit of a brother, like, I'm not touching you, like, kind of situation.
Yeah.
But well, like, they did not need to put that couple in there.
Right. And you know, like, I'm sure you've sat with a group of people where, you know, if it's folks who don't know each other super well, you start to have it where when they're sitting next to each other, like, some people might start to turn in toward a group. And so you mm-hmm, know what I mean? Like, you could see Andy turning in toward Michael, Jim turning in toward Michael, and then Dwight is kind of shunned in a way. And he's,
yeah,
you know,
he could have still been on the end.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I don't need to go down that line anymore, other than to say I agree with your frustration, and that's something that's always bothered me as well.
Also, diving into the Dunderpedia article for this episode, that guy in the couple is named. Why does he come up other times in the show? I'm very confused. It says his name is Justin Spitzer.
Wait, his last name too?
Yeah, last name too. Oh, wait, it says he's in two episodes. Hold
what?
On.
Where?
Hold
on. What?
Hold on. Going through. Oh, okay. He is Justin Spitzer. He's in Moving On, Turf War, Viewing Party, Secretary's Day.
Okay, stop.
He's in a whole bunch. Why is he in all these?
Why?
Also, Crime Aid. He's in The Delivery Part 2.
In what role? I don't like this.
He's in the role of Justin Spitzer. That's who he is. Oh my goodness. Why is he there? His first appearance is the Benihana Christmas, and then he appears other times.
Okay, so we'll keep an eye out for him.
Yeah, we need to keep an eye out for Justin Spitzer.
Real name, Steven Sauks.
I'm going to keep an eye out. This is a deep cut, but we're going to roll with it.
Let's get back to the show. So,
yes. Oh, I want to talk about Karen. She tries in the party planning committee to voice some opinions on how to integrate the Stanford people, incorporate their traditions, mm-hmm, as well into what they're planning for the Christmas party at the office. And I feel really bad for Karen.
Me too. Okay, so yeah, in many ways, I feel bad for Karen. Karen is legitimately, she's just trying. And Angela is being Angela, and she has gained a certain level of control, and she does not want to give up that control. And the, mm-hmm, way that she feels that she can keep said control is by not allowing anybody else to have like any give whatsoever. And so she will not let Karen, even in sharing her ideas, she tries to shut her down and make her feel stupid in the hopes that it works to stop her from wanting to participate in the first place. But she just wants to have some stuff that will make the Stanford branch people happy. And it's like, it's an innocent thing. And Angela takes it as a threat. And, you know, like a hooded cobra, she shows her hood and she's ready to strike at Karen for showing interest, it seems.
Yeah. Karen is just trying to be voicing some opinions and showing that she wants to actually be involved in this, which I think is a really positive thing. And everyone else really likes her ideas. They're very good. But Angela basically tells her to leave. And that kind of starts the ball rolling with Pam seeing Karen as as defeated and let down and in this strange place and having a lot of empathy for her and going over and being like, look, I've held grudges before with this person because of her relationship with Jim, but she kind of decides that she's going to be the better person here and fix this and not let this person go on feeling bad during the day at work when she can easily kind of bridge this gap and form a friendship with her. And they do. And it's actually really great. I love Pam in this moment because she puts Karen before herself.
We see Pam show that empathy by pushing aside those differences and really trying to make somebody, you know, feel welcome.
And she could very easily have been just as selfish as Angela and let Karen stew in being rejected. But she didn't. She went over there and she apologized and she lifted her up and she supported her. And she was like, yeah, she commiserated with her about how terrible Angela is. And through all of that, Jim is looking super apprehensive, which I really like that grab by the cameras that they get Jim's reaction, silent reaction to all of this. And you can see that he's like, what is happening? These two women talking to each other. And he even in a confessional, he's like, oh, it's so nice that they're getting along.
Yep. Looks like the Scranton people and the Stanford people are finally coming together. And that's what you want, right?
But they do. They get along and they decide to plan their own party, which it's very in the vein of Pam being pranky. And this prankiness is now her sights are set on Angela. And it kind of escalates to a mean place. Like, it's almost like Karen and Pam become the mean girls. I don't think they started out intending that, but the way Angela took it, it pushed them into the realm of mean. And they eventually conceded because they also realized, like, ooh, it stopped being funny and it started to really hurt some feelings.
Yeah. I think that's exactly right.
My favorite thing about these two parties, though, is I love the competing posters.
Then why are there two flyers?
I understand that this is confusing for everyone. Let me explain. There's a party that starts at 3.
Right.
And then there's a way more fun party that starts at 2:45.
Right. And if you're interested in the way more fun party, all the info can be found here on our more brightly colored flyer.
And legit, the party in the break room was way better. Like,
oh,
it was
yeah.
such a better party, obviously, that was set up that way. And I just I felt for all the people in the office, and they're probably hungry for a really good party. And they finally were about to get one. And I got to say, the parties after this point in the office get increasingly better.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, absolutely. This is
like setting the precedent for like better parties. I mean, we got the karaoke machine, we have the margarita machine, we have Daryl up there with his like synthesizer, we have everyone singing, having a good time. Like it's a good party.
Do you think that was like purposely written in to the script that Angela saw how well a party could be run and put together? And so from that point on, she like knew she needed to step it up, because we do have some awesome parties going forward for the holidays.
I think we see Angela amping it up, or I should say we see Angela loosening up throughout these episodes. I mean, we see just a lot of different things in Angela gradually, her uptightness falling away as the episodes progress. And this might be one of her big moments where, you know, she went and she hid the karaoke machine's power cord because she was all angry about the party. But then she ended up enjoying the karaoke machine and coming around to it because she's like, oh, I could still sing Christmas songs and I don't have to compromise my core beliefs in order to have some fun. But I should let go of a lot of the baggage that she's holding on with a whole bunch of other stuff and loosen up a little bit. And I think we see her doing that. And this might be kind of that first step in doing that in the office. And I think it's really good and growing for Angela to have let go of some of these things that we saw her holding so tightly onto in the beginning of the episode.
I like that read of it. Yeah, I think you're right. Along with her being changed by those aspects, I think maybe she's just growing as a person in general. And there's like a lot more, you know, her relationship with Dwight and, mm-hmm.
Well, there was nothing challenging her before.
There you go.
Right? Like, it feels like this is kind of a point in her life where she is starting to see those challenges. Maybe before this documentary crew started filming, she was pretty set in a standard way. Like, oh, I have my cats. I go to work. I come home with the cats. I go to work. You know, like, she, and now she has a relationship. She is involved with being in front of cameras all day, you know. So she obviously signed away some sort of waiver that, you know, was okay with this. And then now she's meeting new people from different parts of the country that have lived in different places and have different traditions. And, you know, we eventually see her interaction with Oscar is different. And, you know, there's all these wonderful things that are happening and making Angela a better character and a more rounded person. But we should talk about the extra people that come into the office for this party, because the boys return home from Benihana and I guess, and they bring with them two women. Mm-hmm. And they are not the two women that they spent most of the episode wooing at the Benihana. Mm-hmm. And it's it's one of those... it's one of those how this TV series dances that line of... cringy stereotypes and makes it funny, but makes you feel a little bit bad for laughing at it, but at the same time makes you really recognize it and seeing how silly those stereotypes actually are. And the one we're fighting against is how all waitresses look the same. Isn't that right?
Yes. How all waitresses look the same. Exactly.
And that's kind of what I'm assuming went down here, is that they had two, I have to say, more attractive. Can I say that? Is that okay? I'm going to say it. It was two much more attractive women that they were flirting with in the Benihana. Uh-huh. And then they come home with two other women whom I don't know if they either got mixed up, or I don't think that they got mixed up. I think that they got rejected by the other two and they just grabbed two more.
Yeah.
And they were just like, whatever.
That seems to be the discussion that, or that seems to be what the producer had in mind.
I totally got that. Yeah. That's what I got.
Greg Daniels, he's like, that's what we had in mind. He said, but the joke failed because the waitresses that come to the office were still too attractive. He's like, the whole idea was that it was supposed to be that, you know, the ones that they were talking to at the place were, you know, very, very, very attractive. And then the ones that they brought back to the office were not as attractive, but they still were the ones that came back to the office.
They did dress them a little bit frumpier.
Yes.
I saw like their costume, like their uniform was less form fitting. And so they were kind of trying to play off of that. We also have the whole thing of the stereotype that a lot of Asian people look exactly the same.
Yes.
And
this is so cringy, because Michael said, like,
he knows it's wrong.
Oh yeah. He makes a mark on her hand so that he can.
Because that's the whole gag through this whole episode, is that he can't tell them apart. He has also been drinking. He doesn't out and out say it. He refers to it as all waitresses looking the same, which cracks up, which makes Roy and Kevin crack up, which I think that's really funny. I don't know if that was actually there or if they actually started laughing in real life and they kept it in.
Oh,
I would hope that that would be it.
Well, and I want to note too, really quickly, is that I don't think that everybody like this speaks to that whole idea, that whole stereotype, is that I don't think everybody notices that the folks that come back to the office are different from the folks that they talk to at the restaurant. Because based on the conversations that are had, so I'm reading, you know, within the Dunderpedia trivia, I don't think that everybody knew or like notices that. So, okay, here's what I'm wondering if any listeners out there, like, this is their first realization of the fact that the person or the people that they're wooing at the restaurant are different from the people who come back with them to the office.
That to me would be astounding that you don't notice that. It's so noticeable. Like, it's totally noticeable. Like, they look like completely different people.
That, I mean, oh, and maybe that's the case. I just, based on what was like,
I understand. There's like two layers to this stereotype, in that either they bring back women, they don't notice that they're different, and also in the office between the two of them, they don't notice that they're different, even though they're totally different people.
Yeah.
Like, we all notice that. Like, I think that that's why it's a little bit funny to the audience too, because the audience can see that they're different women, and but they can't in the show. There's also that whole layer of the idea that, one woman, another woman, what's it matter?
Right.
And I think that that's also really degrading towards women.
Oh, absolutely.
That, we could just pick up anybody. We tried this one. That didn't work. Let's grab another one. They're just women. You know, we're just hanging out with, you know, it's just like, you're not even really caring about these people's personality. Like, they're people.
Yeah.
You know, and so this whole episode plays on a lot of that. And I like that they do it in the setting of a Christmas party, and they do it in the setting of Christmas because there's a lot going on. I think if they made an episode just focused on this, it would feel really bad.
I mean, it feels bad.
But it would feel even worse than what it is now, because you can be like, oh, Michael's been drinking. They've all kind of been drinking. It's like, he's sad. He's going through all of this breakup stuff. And there's all this Christmas party fighting. There's a lot going on here to sprinkle this, you know, kind of major racism issue going on in here is smart, because it gets broken up a lot. You don't feel the giant weight of it. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of glad that a show like this did that.
Oh, me too. You know? Me too. And
because as opposed to just letting this kind of stereotype kind of be the butt of a joke, they kind of put it in the show in a way that, like many things that they bring up, it highlights how sad and ridiculous and hurtful this can be.
Yes, exactly. And at the end of the day, this didn't help Michael at all, because he just faces more rejection.
Yeah. He's still rejected.
This party blows.
That's true. Yeah. They're out. And they're also students, which is super creepy.
Golly. Yeah. He should have known from the beginning he was too old for them, but apparently he didn't. And so, yeah, they decide to leave, and the bike. He doesn't give the bike to the toy drive. He decides to give it to one of them, and then, you know, she decides that, yeah, I'll have that.
I really like the little aside we get at the very end with Michael and Jim.
Oh yeah,
it's one of those wonderful moments that Michael has. It's very much like on Booze Cruise, where they have kind of this quiet reflection moment together where Michael actually feels like a person. You know, he feels like he is a genuine, thoughtful friend kind of person, instead of this character that he's trying to play all the time to get attention, when he's just kind of chilling out and relaxed. And he has a moment between him and Jim, and the things that they say to each other are just so telling and true. And
why do I feel like crap?
You just had a rebound. Which, don't get me wrong, can be a really fun distraction. But when it's over, you're left thinking about the girl you really like. One that broke your heart.
Jim reflects on Michael going over a rebound. But what Jim is really saying, he's talking about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about how he feels is his rebound with Karen, mm-hmm. and the person he really cares about, which is Pam.
Mm.
Yep.
It hits.
It does hit.
It hits.
I really like that Michael and Jim in these moments are friends.
Yes.
You know, yeah, they're real
simple moments,
real friends in these moments. And I love that redeeming part of Michael's character, that they bring that in often. And it just, every time they do it, it deepens the show. And they don't do it every episode. They don't do it every fifth episode. You know, maybe it comes out like once or twice a season. But when it's there, oh, it's real good. It's real grounding.
Yeah, the Survivor Man episode is mm-hmm. another one where they become friends, which is, I think that one's coming up, right? And it's, or not, I shouldn't say become friends, where they show their friendship. And it's, yeah, mm-hmm. it's simple and sweet. But not everything has to, you know, be sad, because we see that Michael ends up placing a call to someone to invite them to Sandals, Jamaica. And the person says, yeah, they say they will go. And Michael's excited.
I love that they don't say who it is. And I'm not going to say who it is until next episode.
Yeah.
Because I really like that they leave that there, that they just dangle that out. And he's very excited. The person accepts pretty quickly. And it's like, who could he be on the phone with?
I'm trying to think about when I first would have watched this and who I thought it was. And I can't remember, like, that's been so long ago, but I'm wondering.
I don't think I really guessed anybody, but I don't think I guessed who it was.
I did not. Yeah, that's, I will say that for sure. I did not guess who it actually is. That was a surprise to me. So it was good. It was perfect whenever the, and I probably watched the next episode, like right after the first time I saw this. So it's like, what?
Should we go through a couple of our favorite little touches? Because this episode is so long. We're going to go long because this episode is long. It's always been our thing here, mm-hmm. is that we will kind of follow the flow that the episodes take for us. And I want to touch on a couple little details and things in these episodes because there's a lot of funny comedy bits.
Yeah, my one thing that I want to touch on for sure is Angela is standing and Dwight is kneeling with the microphone up to Angela, and she,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, she's singing Little Drummer Boy.
I am a poor boy too.
Rum-ba-ba-bum. And as she is singing this, you know, it is a religious Christmas song. Oscar decides to introduce everyone to Gil, his partner. And so they come in, you know, ready to celebrate.
And he's coming back from a giant vacation.
Oh, yeah. They were just on their vacation, thanks to the settlement, thanks to Michael Scott kissing his face, as well as all the other stuff that happened with that. So, yeah, he thinks, okay, you know, I feel better about this. I'm going to introduce everybody to Gil. And he walks in and sees that scene there playing out. And he tells Gil too soon and they leave.
That is a nice little touch at the end there. And it's just that tiny little cameo of Oscar. It's so good. I really like when the two parties are trying to start and get everyone to come to their party and what they're threatening or inviting each other.
Meredith? If you don't come to my party, you will be very, very sorry.
Is that a threat?
No, it's an invitation.
We have vodka.
Lots of it.
I think that that's really funny. They try and get Meredith in and Kevin's confusion about if he wants to go to the party because Angela's there, but there's also double fudge brownies.
I hear Angela's party will have double fudge brownies. It will also have Angela. So double fudge, Angela. Double fudge, Angela.
I just like everyone's debate. And then it's wonderful, the whole karaoke scene of everyone doing various karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
Your body is a wonderland. I'll use my hands on it. Mm-hmm.
We belong together, Ryan.
And it's so telling what everyone's songs they pick. And it's a really fun montage of seeing everyone do those songs. And man, Kevin's Alanis is quite good.
you ought to know.
Yes. And did we talk about Dwight winning the raffle?
Yes, Dwight wins the raffle. And that's one of the things that kind of irks Angela extra bit, because she sees this man that's supposed to be on her side kind of getting involved in the other party. And then later on, we get to see them using it and they use their pet names for each other.
Monkey, this is Possum. Do you copy?
Copy, Possum. What's your 20?
It's cute.
It's really cute. Yeah, that's the whole part of the gift giving montage too. We have like double, we have all the singing and we have the gift giving. We see Pam giving the robe back to Toby. We see Karen and Jim exchanging the terrible second Bridget Jones movie, which it is terrible. That was a terrible movie. And we see Dwight and Angela playing with the walkies. And we see both Pam and Jim getting uncomfortable watching each other get gifts from other people. So, and we do see a little bit of a connection with Pam and Roy again, like here and there.
Yes. Yeah. They are, you know, there's gift giving there, and they, it's just like, it's trying to be sweet. I don't know. I'm never convinced by them, which I know, like, that's the point, but I'm just never convinced by them.
Yeah, I think it's more about the history that's there.
Yes.
As opposed to there, but the deep love isn't there. You know, it's history and it's comfort of knowing somebody.
Oh, yes. Oh, wow. That's perfect.
But not being in love, right?
The history and the comfort. Yep.
One great thing, we hear Creed doing some songs, and actually that song that Creed is singing is a song that he wrote after when he was leaving his old band, the Grassroots.
Isn't that awesome? I love that.
I love all the musical bits of Creed that we see, because basically Creed is playing himself.
Yes.
Or a caricature of himself.
There you go. That's a perfect. Yeah, I like that. I mean, his name is the same in real life as it is in the show.
And he has these like weird little musical talents that like get thrown in on various episodes we see throughout the series. So they are totally touching on it. They're not trying to hide it, but no one can really get deep enough into Creed because he keeps acting so erratically. And I really love that. I think that's why people fall for Creed, because he is such a strange old dude.
Yeah, I think you're dead right. I like Creed a lot. Even though he's kind of creepy sometimes and has some, I sometimes think too that the character Creed Bratton is playing a caricature of himself in a way, just to like to keep himself safe. And
oh yeah, and we've seen that in the past where they like stole someone's identity, or he like slept on a park bench, he was homeless for a while. Like, he has all these stories that he is also like living a lie of the name he has. It's so convoluted and crazy. There's nothing real to grasp at,
yeah,
to form any real theory about this Creed person. And I think that's the whole point.
And like all of these things, I just see it as him sort of long conning people so that they just leave him alone.
That's perfect. It is the long con. Speaking of one final long con, we get this great final gesture at the end of the episode where Jim finally realizes that, you know what? He isn't too mature to prank Dwight.
Yay!
And he goes and he accepts Pam's gift, and Pam is very happy about that. And they decide to send Dwight on a secret mission, and a helicopter was going to pick him up. And we see Dwight up on the roof. I gotta say, I love that hat he's wearing. That beanie is such like a woodsman beanie. I've seen that all the time, like up in the country.
Oh, yes.
Bright orange. Uh-huh. It's so perfect. The great job, costume department. And yeah, so we see Dwight up on the roof, and instead of making him wait up there all night, which I feel like would have been cruel, they eventually send him a text message that says, "You've been compromised, abort mission, destroy phone." And it's just, it's perfect because it puts a cap on Dwight's expectations. So he never quite knows it's a prank. But he kind of went through a little bit by like waiting up on the roof in the cold for a little while. But it didn't go so far that he was there all night,
right,
or anything,
yeah.
You know,
it wasn't
really weird.
Super harmful. It was like he ends up he'll have to buy a new phone. But like he will be fine about it. He will be happy about it because he thinks that he like did the right thing for the CIA. So he's not bothered by it.
Oh, so good.
Everybody
this is
wins.
A big episode. Should we give it our Dundee for this giant episode?
This week's Dundee, I'm calling it the Snappy Scranton Award. And that is because over on Twitter, Chad Head, that's at Head Chad, messaged us and said, "Hey, just listen to the merger episode. And don't know if you realized it, but Michael first learned about Lazy Sunday from Kelly while waiting in line during pretzel day at approximately 6:45 in the episode.
Because they're acting all tough and everything, uh-huh. But what they were rapping about was cupcakes, the Chronicles of Narnia. Mm-hmm. God, who invented cupcakes, right? I want to kill
them.
Such a good connection. Love that.
But essentially, she's describing that scene, or rather that skit, which was Lazy Sunday. So Michael seems to not be paying attention, but at some point he sees that. He must see that video. And I could see like Kelly forwarding him an email or something like that. And he sees it, and then it ends up becoming Lazy Scranton is how he's inspired.
Yep, that informs his Lazy Scranton video.
So the opposite of Lazy Scranton, the Snappy Scranton Award, goes to Chad Head for pointing that out for us and explaining where that actually was an addition in the show. So
very good sleuthing.
Very good sleuthing. Chad, get on up here and accept your Dundee. Brava.
Bravo. And thanks everyone for listening. Be sure to follow us over at tall_beats. Subscribe and become a member of The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, and also access to our members only bonus feed, which is the conference room in the members only Slack. And be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, which would give us a wonderful gift for the holidays.
Oh, yeah.
We would love to hear that. We love holiday gifts, which are common ratings. And be sure to join us next week, where we talk about episode 11, Back from Vacation, and Domo Arigato, Mr. Scotto.
Domo Arigato, Tiffany Armanto.
Whoa, that's good.